Welcome to the Sisters of Sexuality Five Shades of Play podcast. Question, are you a subscriber of our show? If not, be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and on our YouTube channel. Today's episode is sponsored by Liberator Sex Pills and Shapes. Are you ready to treat yourself to something delicious? Take a look at the Bon Bon Petite Toy Mount by Liberator.com. It is ideal for solo play as it holds both dildos and vibrators, and the Bon Bon is a fan favorite. The super dense foam supports you while straddling, leaving your hands free for exploration. With its moisture-proof lining and soft, removable, washable cover, it is a perfect way to indulge yourself with this clever addition to your sex toy mount collection. And turn any toy into the ultimate sweet spot confection. Visit Liberator.com today to get your very own Bon Bon in a color that suits your room's decor. That's Liberator.com. Now, let's get started with our show. Hello, sexies. You are listening to Sisters of Sexuality, Five Shades of Play. And I am Taylor Sparks, your host and sex goddess for the evening. We are here for the purposes of educating, entertaining, and informing you in all areas of sexuality, sexual health, kink, and relationships, and the business of sex. I am so excited, as I am every week, to welcome a new guest, but today, this is a really big honor. But before I bring her on, let me tell you a little bit about her. Dr. Shamika Thorpe is an award-winning sexuality educator, researcher, and international speaker. Her research focuses on the sexual well-being of Black women using sex-positive and pleasure-centered frameworks. Dr. Thorpe has published over 40 peer-reviewed articles and journals in the field of sexology, psychology, and public health. In 2023, she was listed by BuzzFeed as one of the top 20 Black sexologists you should follow. She has been featured on numerous podcasts as well as online magazines and blogs such as Cosmo, Elite Daily, and Essence. Dr. Thorpe aims to make research relevant to Black communities by translating sex science in meaningful and tangible ways. Dr. Shamika, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Girl, I'm just all the things that you do. I'm like, no. She did that. Yes, girl. Yes. But of course, there's no place like the beginning. So where did this interest lie in sexuality and sex positiveness and you know, therapy? And then, you know, I would say why Black women, but why not? But you know, of course, Black women. But tell us, how did this even, you know, where did this inkling come to delve in this area of study?
Yeah, so I'm from North Carolina, and so I was a case manager in North Carolina for a bit at the local YWCA in Greensboro. And so there I was a case manager for moms. And I was also I also taught comprehensive sex ed. And so what happened was I got hired to be a case manager. And then my job got this grant. And they were like, I think you'll be a great sexuality educator. I was like, oh, okay.
Is there more money in it?
That, right? You know, like I never thought about that before. Okay. And so I did a lot of professional development trainings and learned how to teach a certain curriculum to adolescent girls within the community. So we taught middle schoolers. So it was about 120 girls total in Greensboro. And so that was fun. And that's how I got into it. And I think for me, with the more sex positive piece is doing teen pregnancy prevention work, I realized that there was more that we needed to talk about beyond teen pregnancy prevention. And then with me doing research in undergrad and continuing that in my master's degree, I realized a lot of it focused on adolescent sexual health, sex ed, STI prevention, HIV prevention. But I wanted to do more than that. And I felt like there was a gap in, you know, pleasure and orgasms and relationships and sexual functioning. And so that's how I got into more of the sex positive aspect of of sex research.
Are you still in North Carolina area?
I am in Kentucky.
Oh, you're in Kentucky. So I was in, we raised our kids in Fuquay Varina.
Yeah.
I was there for 18 years and I'm like, gotta go now.
Yeah, it's time.
Uquay is not the end of the world, but you can see it from there.
Yeah.
You
know?
But it's a great place to raise kids. The South is a good place, is a really good place. So would you say that when you started doing, you know, educating for middle school girls and high school girls, you know, and, you know, you get that growth between middle school and high school, right? You get a little more self-aware. You get a few more mean girls between middle school and high school. Which of the set of girls did you find more open, and or which of the set of girls did you find more challenging? And especially since you were in the South, you're in the Bible Belt, you know, they were raised a certain, some were raised, you know, a certain kind of way. Did you find one set more challenging and one set more open, or they all were kind of?
I think it varied. I think it varied. So I think, you know, we're thinking about like the classic mean girls. I think if the leader of that group was open to having a conversation, then everyone else in that group was open to having a conversation. And it wasn't necessarily like they thought that they were know-it-alls, but they were open to just talking about sex and saying like, hey, you know, these are the things I see. Now, for some of those girls too, they were open to talk about it because they didn't have a safe space to talk about certain things. And a lot of them had experienced sexual trauma. And, you know, the first time that they had ever told someone sometimes was us as educators. Wow. And so, you know, just holding space for that as well. But overall, I don't think I ever really had a classroom dynamic where I felt like there was a student that thought they knew it all related to sex. Now, they might think they know it all related to like general life and, you know, middle school and high school stuff, but not like, oh, I knew it all related to sex. So everyone was eager to learn. I think the students that often were more challenging were those that were quiet and challenging as in like, I didn't know if they were receiving the information because they were just quiet. But at the end, we realized that they were receiving it. So that was good because, you know, they talked about how the program had a major impact on their lives and how they shared the information with other people.
So that's amazing. What do you think was the most, like you talk about impact, what do you think was the most impactful for, you know, these are our girls. They're us, you know, before we learned what we learned. And what, you know, based on some of the feedback that you got, what do you think helped them the most when it came to knowing about sex and sexuality?
I think what helped them the most is kind of like shifting norms. So we talk about that a lot in like public health. So my background's in public health. So understanding that everyone's not having sex, although you think that they are, and seeing that some of the girls that were more popular that were in the class that they probably thought were having sex hadn't had sex. And so it kind of shifted that norm for them, like, oh, okay, maybe not everyone is doing this. And, you know, so I think that that was something that was very helpful for them. Also just being seen and heard. So whether heard meant like vocally they were participating or, you know, they were journaling or whatever, but they felt heard in the classroom. And that was important for them as well, because a lot of times they didn't have teachers that, you know, their teachers were burnt out, to be honest. So a lot of times they didn't have that space to just be heard from teachers or counselors or whoever else.
So you created this amazing safe space to help these young women, you know, learn about themselves. Would you say that there was one question that came up a lot, either about sex or sexuality or gender, or just, you know, when's the right time? Was there any particular question that you saw over the years that kind of, this is the one thing that people keep asking about?
Well, the one thing that they kept asking at the time, it was really popular, the blue waffles image of sex. So it was
did I miss that?
So it was an image called blue waffles, and everyone was saying how that was super popular. And so they were like, oh, blue waffles is like, you could get this. You could get blue waffles. People thought it was an STI. What it was someone that had multiple STIs.
Okay.
And so, but students thought you could get blue waffles, right? It's not like it was multiple. It's like, I'm going to get blue waffles. And so the person's like labia, I think they were like tinted a bit blue, but then also they had, you know, different types of sores and things like that. So then we had to always talk about that and how that's not a real thing, but we could walk through the different types of STIs that people could get.
I missed the whole, how recent was this?
Like 2012, 2013.
Oh yeah, no, my kids were out of high school. No. No, well, no, I never heard of it. Okay, I'm trying to think where they were in 2012, 2013, because we're in 2020. Shoot, okay, don't make me out of my head.
So a decade ago. So yeah. So they were talking about blue
college.
waffles. And then the other thing that a lot of them asked is like if they could get pregnant from anal sex, if you could get pregnant standing up, and if you could get pregnant from oral sex. Now, these were middle schoolers asking these questions. The standing
Could
up
you?
one was still a question we got from high schoolers too.
They thought that you could not get pregnant if somebody ejaculated in you and you were standing up because the sperm
Yep, because of
couldn't
gravity.
because
They
of
like, oh, it's
gravity,
going.
which is just the opposite of if you're trying to get pregnant, just put your legs over your head so that it will run further down into your vaginal canal. I guess. Sure. I thought at one time you could get, when I was probably in middle school, you could get pregnant from the faucet water.
See, everybody has questions.
Are you wondering how that came to be?
Yes.
Masturbating with the tub faucet water.
Oh, and so you're like, yeah, okay, I can see that.
Yeah, so I just do people always confess to you? That's my confession.
Sometimes.
Did you, when the girls felt safe enough to discuss their trauma, where do you guide them from there? Do you, depending on what it is, I'm sure, is it something that some of them just needed to get off their chest and they got a hug and or did some of them really need to be guided into more deeper?
Some of them needed to be guided into more deeper things related to therapy and counseling. And then, of course, in certain situations, we were mandated reporters, so we had to tell people. But other students felt like they had talked to someone else, so they had told their mom or they had told their
Okay.
grandma. So someone knew. Now, whether or not that person listened to them and believed them is a totally different thing, but someone else knew that it was happening. It was only one situation where it was like actively still happening while the
Yeah.
person was still in class. And so, of course, that was a situation where we had to,
Report.
make a report. But yeah, I think some of them, you could tell when they were like seeking comfort versus those that were like, please help me, And so I think, it's understanding that and asking them what they needed and who they had told and, things like that.
Did you, I mean, you work with adults as well, correct? Between working with the young adults and us grown folk, have you found one more, I'm not gonna say pleasurable, but one more satisfying than the other, or they're all equally satisfying being able to help anybody with their sex and sexuality or their gender identity or getting through trauma? Have you found one more?
I think it's something about people over 60 right now that is just tickling my fancy. Like I love it. See, I love it.
I'm over 60.
Especially being raised in the South. And, I think for me, being working with women that have been over 60, they just want a safe space to talk. And that's the same thing we see with younger girls. So sometimes it doesn't feel different. It feels like you're dealing with the same things, just a different age groups.
Really?
And part of that is because there was a culture of silence around what you could and could not say. And, you knew how babies were made, but that's it. And we're not talking about sex beyond that. And so a lot of times people didn't have the resources to then educate what would be my generation, right? Like the children of the people that are in their 60s. And so now we're the ones like exploring things and trying to figure out all these different things. And so I think I've seen with women that are over 60 that it's like they have this place where they can just be open and ask questions and be vulnerable and not be judged. But also they're interested in like exploring more things and trying to figure out what sexual freedom and variety looks like for them. So I was reading
Yes.
this study recently, and it showed that Black women, older Black women actually value sexual variety, so engaging in different sexual behaviors, more than younger people. And part
younger,
of that,
younger Black women, or just
yeah, more than younger Black women. So, and the reason why, and what they're assuming, so the authors are Dr. Ashley Towns, she's the lead author on the paper. But, you know, what they're assuming is that Black women, as they age, our definition of sex changes. And so we may not be able to engage in certain behaviors that we would when we were younger, or we didn't have the opportunity to, and now we want to expand what sex is beyond, like, vaginal penetration, right?
Sure.
Or oral
sure.
sex. And so there's other things we can do to still have intimacy and have pleasure. And so that's something that's valued more as Black women age.
Interesting. I haven't read the study, but I would definitely tend to agree. Out of the couples I talk with, and as you know, I don't do therapy. I coach. So, you know, therapy is more about, you know, uncovering and recovering from things. And, you know, coaching is more about discovering. So my topics with couples who come to me or women who come to me is kind of that, right? They're looking to discover something new, and they're trying to figure out, how do I tell my partner that I've discovered this thing somewhere I read, or somebody, or they go to a new place, or they go to a resort, or they, you know, even going to places like, I'm not sure if you heard of Cap d'Agde in the south of France. Mm-mm. So it's a nudist village of 50,000 nudists every summer. Everything from 2-year-old babies to like 80-year-old grandmothers. So you can go to the liquor store naked, you can go to the bank naked, that's grocery cool. store naked, the restaurant naked. Most people put something around their butt, but you know, you can be sitting there topless, and you find a place that's like this. And of course, since it's a nudist village, the swingers are like, there's naked people, we want to see.
So
the swingers end up there, you know, and then they have their own space, yada, yada.
Yeah.
When you get introduced to something like that, and some people at a much later stage in life, you're like, well, hell if I mean, I got introduced earlier, but but to have that experience, I think, as I've met women who've come to me and they're still having challenges, even giving oral sex to their partner.
Yeah.
What you've been doing all these years, and why? And they're like, well, my mama said.
Yep.
I'm like, but you're not sleeping with your mama. And some of them, of course, referred to, you know, well, the way I was raised in the church. I said, well, if you go to the chapter in the Bible that says the marital bed cannot be defiled, nothing's off limits with your husband.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing's off limits. And then they kind of go, And the husband's like, I told you, you know.
Yeah.
So the women in their 60s, interesting. So are you, you know, giving them, you know, orders to go to hedonism for a week, or are they coming to you because they're challenged with these new needs, wants, and desires, and they just need to talk to somebody to make sure that it's okay? What have you found some of the reasons why they're having this moment?
Yeah, so some people have actually like referred out to sex therapists if they feel like they needed that. But I think for other women, it's just like, okay, what are some online resources, or what are some tools, or I want to learn more about this. So oral sex is a good one, because a lot of times, like, I've heard the same thing over and over, especially women that were raised, Black women that were raised in the church. And Southern Baptist Church, let's be clear.
It is a Southern Baptist Church. Yeah. Very, very, very much so.
Yeah. So I think for them, it's like, sometimes I just need the basic resources and I don't want to talk about it with other people yet, but maybe I want to watch an online video, or I want to attend an online workshop where my camera's off, or something like that. Like, sometimes that's what they need, or just like books. And so that's what's been helpful. But when people like want therapy or counseling, I will refer them out to therapists and counselors.
Sure. Oh, that is good. This is why on my Organic Lovin' site, I have over 250 books. Because it's great to have all the sex toys and all of that, but and the lubes and the this and the that and anal plugs. But if you don't really know, it just kind of sits in the drawer. So we've got books like on sex and sexuality and gender identity and sexual health and wellness and anal and everything, oral. For him, for her, for them. But that, because my mom always told me, anything you want to find out, you can learn in a book.
That's true.
You know, so that is good. Yeah, I do the opposite. I refer people to therapy. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, this is above my pay grade. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes that people are working through a lot of sexual shame and guilt, and yes. That's what it is. And so sometimes you can't find that in a book. So yes. I think that's a lot of times where people are working through, because I was reading, I had written a paper about masturbation mm-hmm. and Black women's messages that they received about masturbation. And so many of them are rooted in sexual shame and guilt. And you shouldn't do it due to the church and due to religion. And so you have to realize that people get those messages early on, and then they go into adulthood, and all of a sudden people are like, now be sexually free. And you're like, how can I when I'm carrying all this sexual guilt that wasn't mine to carry in the first place, you know?
It wasn't even yours to carry mm-hmm. in the first, just picking up shit along the road. Mm-hmm. Like, let me take this. No, I'll take that. No, I got room.
Yeah.
I'll carry that.
Yeah.
Into the Sante. So, well, before I want to ask you also about men and their sex and sexuality, because you work with men as well. But I do want to take a moment and just mention our sponsor, you know, which is, of course, Union Condoms. And I want to introduce you, if you don't know Dr. Shamika, to Union Vegan Condoms. They are game changers in the world of pleasure and protection. And yes, they are vegan, and no, they are not a lettuce wrap. You cannot eat them. But do experience the ultimate connection with your precision fit condoms. Say goodbye to animal byproducts and unpleasant odors. And at Union, because they keep it clean and simple with their formulas. Union condoms are more than just protection. They're your ticket to safe and comfortable intimacy for all of your body parts. So why wait? Elevate your pleasure with Union condoms today and visit them at unioncondoms.com to redefine your intimacy game. And when you do, when you purchase your very first purchase, you will get 20% off with the coupon code ORGANICLOVE. So that's unioncondoms.com, because love should be clean, simple, and sensational. And of course, always practice safe and consensual intimacy. So there. unioncondoms.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors for that. So do you also work with men?
I have not as much. So we did one study. I did one study with my mentor, which was on Black people in general and their definitions of good sex. And we did do a little research on Black men and their messages that they received about masturbation. Mm-hmm. But most of my research tends to focus on Black women.
Okay. Okay. Have you, and this is not sex-based, but I don't know, because you're a studied woman, and you are focused, of course, on Black women. Have you read, oh God, the book, Black Women, Black Love, America's War on Black Marriage?
No.
Dr. Professor, oh my God, her name is escaping me right at this moment. I did interview her a few months ago. Mm-hmm. It is an amazing book. As it talks about, you know, our challenges with our relationships and marriage since coming to this country as slaves. I use her book as part of the research for my book on ethical non-monogamy. But I think you would just find it a fascinating read, because yeah. her studies went very deep, and her research went very deep into the slave narratives and, mm-hmm. you know, what we did for love and what we did to each other for love, but what white America has done against us all the way up to mentioning Michelle Obama as being the angry Black woman, yeah. you know, and she talked about, you know, the sexual stereotypes, or I talked about the sexual stereotypes as well. What are some of the sexual stereotypes that you have found in your time working with Black women, Black girls, mm-hmm. older Black women, that have kind of stuck with us, so to speak, despite, yeah. you know, the sex positivity and the freedom? What are some of the sexual stereotypes that just won't seem to go away, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there's two. So the ones I could think of the most are the superwoman, or like the strong Black woman. That stereotype has stuck, and it's definitely impacting our sex life. So with some work that I've done, I've seen that, you know, people that endorse being a strong Black woman often hesitate to talk to their medical provider or their partner about the sexual pain that they're experiencing. And so that can be very problematic, because then people are having you know, symptoms and pain for a longer amount of time, causing more issues. But they don't feel like that anyone would listen to them, or they don't want to burden anyone. And I remember there was a quote from one Black woman that's always stood out to me that said, well, one person said, I don't want to make it awkward by telling him. And then another person said, well, this is my burden to carry. So thinking that your sexual pain is your burden to carry.
That hurt my heart.
That hurt my heart.
Oh, I literally felt that. And was this someone that was in work with you?
It was someone that worked with me. So we did a research study with 284 Black women living in the South and interviews with 25 of them. And so this was out of the 284.
And did you have a response for her when she said that? Or what?
It was a survey. Can
I ask, what is your thought process? Like, if someone came to you and said that, what would your response be to someone like that?
Well, I think part of it, I don't know who I heard said this, but like, we should be having sex with people that care about us. And so I think that there's some level of care that's also missing there, that if you feel like you can't talk to your partner about your pain because it's a burden, right? And understanding that you yourself are not a burden. And if you're having these issues, your partner should care about it. And research has shown that male partners actually do care, but women don't tell them. So those are heterosexual relationships. They don't tell them, and so they care, but they would love to help, but they don't know how, because no one's telling them, like, hey, this is what's happening. And so, you know, I think also that makes me question, like, what other things that person may be doing in their life, or it's like other burdens that they're carrying by themselves. Even if they have that level of social support, still sometimes people don't know how to let go of certain burdens related to that.
They don't know how to use their words. Mm-hmm. And this is, I had a seminar that I do teach. I'm going to teach it probably for the first time, but about using your words and how people just won't speak up for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, where me, I speak up for myself and the person sitting next to me. And people, don't be treating the people down the street that way. I speak up for too many people sometimes. But I have no problem speaking up for myself. So the strong Black woman, yes, that is one. And what was the other sexual stereotype that you have seen?
Being a Jezebel, so being hypersexual and promiscuous, that's an issue. So that's an issue related to sexual anxiety, where Black women often feel like they want to explore different things in the bedroom, but if they vocalize these things to their partner, they're afraid that they perceive them as being like a hoe or being promiscuous. Or, you know, not talking to their doctor about sex because they feel like, well, the doctor will automatically assume that you're a hoe and you're having sex with multiple people because, you know, now you want to talk to them about sex and pleasure, not reproductive health, right? When it's something related to fibroids or endometriosis or anything like that, Black women feel comfortable talking about it. But if it's something related to your pleasure, then it's a issue.
It is an issue, and some doctors, gynecologists themselves, are having issues with their own sexuality, and they don't have an answer for you. One, it's not their area of study, pleasure, so most of them don't have any answers for you. Even my own OBGYN had no idea of the chemicals that were in lubricants that could quite possibly be causing the irritation and dryness that a lot of their patients were experiencing. And I'm like, it's the lubricant. And they're like, huh? I'm like, girl.
So yeah.
I'm like, this is my area of study. I'm not a doctor, but you know, my background is in organic chemistry, but I'm like, this is what's causing this challenge. You know, and the Jezebel, that was two areas that I talked about in my book. And who was it? Dr. Valerie also has a whole study on Black women in the swinger community. Yeah. And she talked about the different stereotypes, the Jezebel, the mammy, who is, you know, asexual, you know, putting everybody's needs before her own, you was kind, you was kind, and how it's still in today's society, you know, the sapphire, you know, girl, don't you, and the sapphire, of course, is always, you know, putting down Black men, a la Pam and Martin's in the Martin show, right? Yep. So even recent movies, these sexual stereotypes are still being put out there about Black women. And it just seems like, and I'm not sure if you feel this way, it just seems like the more sexually free we as Black women get, the more labels that are put upon us, Jezebel, bot, you know, and then some of the younger women, they're like, I don't give a fuck what you call me, but do what I want to do. And whoever's coming this way is coming this way. So I feel like women have changed a lot, but men have not changed much.
Yeah, I think that's something that I see, and I've seen that a lot even with college students. So I'm an assistant professor at the University of Kentucky, and so in my sexuality education class, that's something that I see where people are like, yeah, we're more sexually free and open, and men are a little hesitant to embrace that, right? You know, especially for people that are in these relationships, they're like, yeah, they're hesitant to embrace that, or they want to know, like, where did you learn that, or you know, want to know body counts and things like that.
Don't question me.
But for people that are in same-sex relationships, they're not having that experience, right? And most of them are not reporting that that's an experience that they're having. You know, I think it's just something that we're seeing that's happened across multiple generations where that's a thing that continues to happen. And so we had to have a whole class discussion on body count and, like, why that doesn't matter and all this different stuff. So.
Well, you know, in my personal opinion regarding body count, I'm like, you don't need to tell these people your business. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't tell your body count, because it's none of their fucking business, there's no judgment, which is not the same thing as not being authentically honest. Because I have this thing about the difference between honest communication and authentic communication. I'm talking about the world in general. Them folks don't need to judge you and know your body count. And you don't, every time you're dating somebody, it doesn't need to be on social media, you know, give it a year. Let's see if he earns a spot, you know, to be on it. But if you keep putting every guy you're dating out for the world to see, then that just, you know, that leaves room for the judgment. So it's not about having shame. It's about, stay the fuck out of my business. Which is my thought process. I'm not saying it's the right process. Yeah. But I'm like, they're like, have you had sex this year? Who are you talking to?
All right.
This is our first date. Why do you think you have the right to ask me about my sex and sexuality and who I've done anything with? And even if I had, I'm not telling you.
Yeah. Or that's the thing too that I've seen is like a lot of college students are saying that they don't know how to date.
Without having sex?
They don't even know what dating is, right? Like, but so the first date, they might meet up at a party, or they might meet up at like a game, or meet up at somebody's house or go to their house. Date number two or three, they're having sex. And then after that, it's like, okay, so now what do we do? Like they were having a conversation about how they have never really just been like a person that's going out on dates, or like maybe we went to a restaurant, or maybe we went to the park. Like, it's rare that they engage in those types of activities. Wow. And how COVID actually made it worse, because you couldn't really do much. So now the expectations have lowered, and people, you know, those formative years of when you learn how to date, whether it be in high school, like later high school years, or early in college, they didn't get that.
Oh, I hadn't thought, the dating, I think dating is fun. Even though I don't always go out to meals with people, and I always do the, I call it my Tinder catch and release program. But it works with any app. It doesn't have to, I just call it Tinder catch and release. And so when you match with somebody, right? And you get your like type 5 questions answered. Why are you here? Who do you belong to? Mm-hmm. What are you looking for? What do you like to do, kind of thing, you know? And then you find some things in common. So then you meet, not date. You meet for a cup of coffee or ice cream, right? And then you get like your next top 10 questions answered. Again, who do you belong to? Because they probably lied the first time. Who do you belong to? Is there someone that thinks you belong to them? Definitely. You know, what do you have in common? Because I figured by the time I finish a 10 ounces of a cup of coffee, I know if I want to be bothered with you again or not. Mm-hmm. And also it's helpful that I'm ethically non-monogamous, so I'm not looking for the one.
Yeah.
Right? So you go, you have a cup of coffee, you get to know each other. And if it turns out to be good, then that's the catch.
Yeah.
And if you're like, oh my God, they're crazy, they're an idiot, you release them to the wild.
Yeah. You release them back to the app.
You release them back to the wild, you
with
know?
No warning to the
Listen.
others.
Hey, I did my research. Listen, you need to do your own. This way, but this way you don't have these expectations. You're not stuck over a plate with somebody for 2 hours at dinner or a game at, for 2 hours. You just quit. And that, but if it's good, then you can schedule a date. But at the very least, you might at least expect, I've met a friend. Not the future Mr. Such a, at the very least, I've met a friend. Maybe I've met guys that have been, I mean, some of the most amazing guys. They're amazing for me. But like, they're going to be amazing for somebody, but they weren't amazing. But I meet nice guys all the time. They're just not for me, some of them. And I've gotten salsa partners out of it. I've gotten marketing guys who's, oh, I usually charge $5,000. So let me just take a look at your site and do some SEO for you. Really? Thank you.
Thank you.
Girl.
Yeah.
Tell them what I said.
I'll tell
Just
them.
do meet and greets.
Yeah.
And just to get to know them, and then do a date
Yeah.
if it turns out. The
They have no
sex,
clue. They have
yeah.
no clue.
The sex on the first date or not,
Yeah.
that if you want it, you want it. If you don't, just don't have any high expectations that it will turn into anything other than that. Because sometimes, in my opinion, sex is just sex.
Thanks.
Do you tell them that? Do you tell them that
Yeah,
sometimes
I
sex
do
is
tell
just
them
sex?
that. I tell them that sometimes sex is just sex. I think for them, a lot of times they're falling into situationships.
Like
Like
believing
they,
it's more than.
so they're having a relationship with this person. Well, they have relationship expectations with this person, but there's not a title on whatever they're doing.
Because they're
And so
making
then that
assumptions.
person could be, so then that person could be actually dating other people. And they're assuming that they're in a relationship with this person because of the expectations.
And they don't use their words. They don't ask any questions. Like, are you seeing other people? Like,
It's so interesting. I like just being in that class and hearing them talk and go back and forth about certain stuff. It's just like, oh, okay, this is what's happening.
But to me, Dave, people assume, especially if you're raised monogamous, you assume monogamy very quickly and you start on the escalator. Well, we've been doing this for this long, so that means that, and we've been doing that for that long, and then we have to, I was like, oh, no. Instead of saying, so, are you seeing other people? I'm seeing other people. I think we can see other people. And I think women, do you feel as though women assume more than men, or that there are also men that make assumptions that she's not sleeping with anybody but me? And then he finds out she's sleeping with three or four other people.
It seemed like women were assuming more than men, but men felt like they wanted to be in relationships with, like they wanted to be in committed relationships with a person, but didn't know either one, how to initiate that, or two, how they would be perceived by their peers, because they're still in perception phase of how I would be perceived not having multiple women or not being someone that's dating multiple people. But ultimately, it seemed like most of them wanted to be in committed relationships, but they have no clue how to form that. And so, for those that did, especially the women that did, they were often dating people back home. So, a lot of them were dating people back home, not at their university because of it.
So they had long distance relationships that were steady, if you will. And while they were on campus, they were just focused on work on campus, on focus on their studies because they didn't know how to navigate this alternate universe.
Yeah, and we see that a lot. So, like a research on college students shows that first generation college students and college students that aren't white, so mostly Black college students and Latino college students, are more likely to date people back home than people on campus.
Really? Isn't that interesting? I'm trying to run through my kids' college years right quick. They didn't date. Nope, they didn't date. Well, actually, I wouldn't say I forbade it, past tense, them to have relationships in high school, but pretty much I was like, They think I was telling them to be polyamorous. And I'm like, no, I just didn't want you to get caught up with one person during high school. You need to be focused on school. Mm-hmm. So I always tell them to date multiple people at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they were like, you always try to make us. I wasn't even part of myself at the time. I just didn't want you to get hung up mm-hmm. in a relationship when you need to focus on your studies. And when you get to college, you're more mature than you are, at least in the beginning mm-hmm. of high school. And then that way, you can, you know, date lots of people so you can figure out what you really like. So when it's time to settle down with one person, mm-hmm. you'll have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, that was just the way I was. I don't like dating lots of people at the same time. I think I've always been poly and didn't know it until I.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have ever got married if I'd found out, figured out about poly in my 20s.
Yeah.
Because, the 25 years of marriage was, it was good. It was good. I did my time. Yeah. So, do you? 25 years is a life sentence.
It is. It's a long time.
I got out without having to do parole.
It's a long time.
I didn't have to do a halfway house or anything.
Yeah.
Well, it was a good marriage. It was a good marriage. We didn't want the same thing at the end of the day.
Yeah.
He's okay. He's still alive. I didn't kill him in his sleep, but I thought about it. It's, I can confess it because he's not really dead. So now you're working with the college students and, you know, do you find them any more exciting than working with middle school and high school because they've had more experiences? So there's more in-depth conversations with them.
I think they make me hopeful. Let's put it that way. Hopeful in a way that, like, they are open to having hard conversations about sex that other generations previously wouldn't. I think open to discussing things that they don't fear being judged. And I think in the classroom related to whatever they're going to say. And that could be the environment that, like, I create where it's like, you're not going to be judged related to that. Or it's just like, because they don't know, most of them don't know the other people in the classroom, which is very surprising to me. Like, none of them knew each other. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, hello.
How big is the class?
32.
Yeah, university.
Yeah, 32. So I think, you know, they're just open to having those conversations. And I think, you know, they are willing to talk about, you know, them being polyamorous, or they're willing to talk about, you know, how they are dating multiple people, or they're going to talk about all the places you could get condoms and places where you should and should not get plan B and who's always out of plan B. Like, those conversations they're going to have, and it's going to be fine.
Are you familiar with B condom?
Yes.
So did you see their recent announcement that they came out with so you know about PrEP, right? Mm-hmm. To help to prevent acquiring HIV.
Mm-hmm.
They have a similar formula. Well, I'm not going to say formula. They have a similar pill, which now will help prevent you from getting gonorrhea, syphilis, and I think chlamydia.
Interesting. No, I didn't
see
that.
They just came out with this announcement, and they, you know, and it's going to be rolled out to, you know, Walmart and all the pharmacies. So, interesting. I mean, do you have a professional opinion about PrEP?
I was actually working on a project that was funded by NIH to increase PrEP uptake among Black women living in Louisville, Kentucky, and within Georgia. I think the thing with PrEP that I've seen with the Black women that we've worked with in the community, when we're asking them about, like, intentions to use it, and they're like, oh, this is something that's useful, like, more people should know about it, but I don't know if it's necessarily like, yeah, I'm going to be the person that's going to go get on it, but other people that I know should definitely take it. It's like, oh, okay. I think what we know with PrEP is that a lot of times Black women are hesitant to take it because, one, you're adding, if you're on the pill, you're adding another pill that somebody has to take if they're already taking medication. Two, they have to believe that they would possibly contract HIV and that they're at risk for it. So they would have to believe those two things.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's also a medical mistrust thing where we know that Black women have been experimented on for, you know, contraceptive trials and with Depo. And so, you know, that led to sterilization. Yeah. So people are very hesitant to take PrEP. And I think they have their right to be hesitant about it. And I think for me, PrEP is one of those things that I just want people to be informed, and what they choose to do with that information, that's completely on them. But as long as people are aware of it, because we know that doctors aren't telling Black women about it, which that's the issue. So as long as they're aware of it, fine. But, you know, them being hesitant, I completely understand. Them deciding they don't want to get on it, I completely understand that too.
Well, because you still could use a condom, which is less detrimental to your health. And considering PrEP is, what has it been, around 15, 20 years?
It's been around for a while.
It's just becoming more, you know, as we have the social media, it's becoming more known. And I know some people that are taking it, and, you know, my first thought is, why don't you just use a condom? You know, I just, and I just feel odd about putting something in my body that I'm not exactly sure as to what it's doing, really. When we could just put on a condom. I mean, you know, condoms break and there's that, you know, but.
Well, and I think it's also the assumption too, that like, I think for the people that I see that are more likely to use it are those that are either engaging in some type of transactional sex, people that may be in unsafe or abusive relationships, so they can't wear condoms because their partner won't allow them to, but they know their partner is having sex with other people. So those are the two groups that I've seen the most where they're like, you know, I'll definitely do PrEP because of that. Or, I mean, there's just honestly some people that are just like, hey, because I still want to have that sensation or feeling, you know, I don't want to wear a condom.
Feels the same.
But I know, but that's the reason, you know?
There's no feeling on the inside for the vagina. What for the women? What do they not know that part of biology? Like, there's nothing to feel. Like,
yeah, but that's the thing. So we know, like, yeah, it's condoms, but people aren't going to wear them. So, I mean, I can tell you the numerous focus groups I've done with Black women. I asked them last time they wore a condom. They couldn't even remember. So people aren't wearing condoms.
I know. I've seen them. I'm like, go away. I think I was out of my group of girlfriends in the 80s living in LA in my 20s having a hella good time, and AIDS hit. I think I was the first one to go buy condoms. And was giving it to my girl. I was like, we need to start using these. And they were like, what? I'm like, no, like, seriously. And have been using them since. And I mean, I didn't get married until I was like in my 30s. And even when I And then, but, you know, people talk about people in the lifestyle that, I mean, do you find people that identify as lifestylers in, you know, in college that are having sex with multiple people?
No, not. If so, they haven't vocalized it. Let's put it that way.
They're just having sex with multiple people without labels. Yeah, but I find in my own profession and even in personal, because I teach mostly in the swinger community and the ethical non-monogamous community, they're more responsible of getting tested, and mostly because you're dealing with couples.
Yeah.
So the last thing you want to do is give your partner something.
Yeah.
And then they fuck up all the fun. So. Girl, it's a lot. It's a lot. You sound like you really, really, really love what you do.
I do. I do. Yeah, I love
it. I can tell. So final question. And I'm not sure if you consider this a personal question or a professional question, but it's a question I thought I was at the gym today. I'm like, that's something like, I don't know. It's probably not, it's only profound in my head. But just thinking about sex in your own thought process, what does sex mean to you?
That's a good question. I've never been asked that question before.
Maybe I did find a profound question that I could not ask.
What does sex mean to me? I think instantly what I thought, I was like, oh, well, sex means different things to me at different points in my life. Right. Okay. So I think, you know, thinking about me in my 20s, what sex felt like was something that was very much like you were going in for pleasure, it didn't always necessarily result in like intimate connections. So when we were talking about sex just being sex, that just is what it is. And I think that's changed a bit into my 30s, where it's more of something that I feel like has some type of connection. I think that sex is spiritual in certain ways. So when you were thinking about the different like levels of intimacy, the one that means the most to me is spiritual intimacy. And so I think it feels that way for me because of that now, and the ways that I've grown over the last, I guess, decade. And I think for me, sex is something that feels like a connection and feels more vulnerable than it did when I was in my 20s. And so I think that's, I think like that's my definition of sex, you know, but I think your definition changes.
Sure, for sure.
And so, yeah, I'm like, definitely from my 20s or 30s, I can see how it has changed.
Yeah, and it will change in your 40s and 50s and 60s.
And I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I don't know, in my 60s now, it kind of, I think it kind of feels like my, anyway, I'm not going to talk about me, it's about you. Anyway, Dr. Shumika, thank you so much for being on the show. It has been an honor to have you here. It's just been, you are just a wealth of knowledge, and I'm sure your students are just happy they have taken your courses.
Thank you. I hope so.
Thank you again. So to stay up to date with Dr. Shumika, you can visit her website at drshumika.com. And of course, on all social media, Instagram and Facebook at Dr. Shumika. And to stay up to date with Sisters of Sexuality, feel free, if you have any questions for me or our guest, to email me at sistersofsexuality@gmail.com. And we, of course, are on all social media at Sisters of Sexuality. Be sure to visit our sponsors, liberator.com, unioncondoms.com. And don't forget, you get 20% off with your first order using the code ORGANICLOVE and my sister site, organiclovin.com. I want to thank you all so much for tuning in. And if this episode has resonated with you, would you please consider subscribing as a way to supporting the growth of this channel and allow us to keep informing, educating, and entertaining you. Thank you. And until next week, bye-bye.
Organic Lovin', for the bodies you love to love. How do people describe you? Are you curious, playful, maybe sensual? Adventurous. How about open-minded? The truth is, no matter who you are, Organic Lovin' has something to indulge your fantasies. We offer only organic, natural, and eco-friendly intimate body products, including vegan condoms, organic lubricants, body-safe sex toys, and sex-positive books. You won't find anything harmful in our products or toys. We also have a full range of other experiences, including erotic seminars and exotic adult-only vacations. Receive our adult subscription box for a monthly sexual delight. Be educated, entertained, and informed. Organic Lovin'. For her, for him, for you, for the bodies you love to love. Visit organiclovin.com. We offer shipping worldwide, so stop by the site anytime. Organic Lovin'. That's LOVEN.com.